What's up, spookies? You know, the last couple of episodes, you kind of roused on me for not doing, like, not, like, saying our names at the start of the episode.
I didn't rouse on you. I saved your bacon.
Anyway, it's me, Scott Robert Wallace. My address is... I'm here with Crystal Freya Pettit.
Oh, my God. Is that my middle name. That's embarrassing.
It's a really good middle name.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, thanks. And this is Spooky Bitch Gang, and it's a podcast where we talk about horror movies, spooky things, you know, there's a little bit of social commentary,
chips,
film criticism. Sometimes we talk about chips a lot. Do you have any chip stories you want to share with the audience?
I ate chips today, but that's not really a story.
I didn't eat chips.
They were pretty good.
Hey, I watched something recently.
Yeah.
That people have been talking about for so long. To me and not to me, but I've heard it. Everyone's been saying that this is like a fantastic movie. It came out in 2016.
Okay.
And I was always like, yeah, I'll get around to it, whatever. Joke's on fucking me, because turns out The Love Witch, directed by Anna Burr, is like the greatest movie I've ever seen in my fucking life. Mm-hmm. And I'm a fucking idiot that I took until now to watch it. Not only is it fantastic, which everyone's been saying, but also it's the sexiest movie I've ever seen. And no one said that to me before, so I wanted to get that out into the world.
That's so interesting that no one said that, because, like, this movie in every way is trying to be, like, a sexy 70s, maybe late 60s exploitation movie.
Yes, I agree, except I would not use the term trying to be, because I feel like it's its own new thing. It's, like, contemporary sexual politics.
Yeah.
But with this aesthetic that is just so, it's so seamless. Like this feels like, you know, I hate the whole, like, I hate auteur theory. I hate people like deifying really average men who make a bunch of movies about like themselves and everyone's like, oh, they've got a whole thing. This is like, I feel like a good example and a true example of an auteur-led film, because she did fucking everything on the movie. And what we get as a result of that is this movie that has no patches, or everything just works. Everything is tonally, like, there's something unified about it. And it is so gorgeous. It's beautiful to look at. It's fucking, I felt spellbound watching it. Like, I really felt like I was falling in love. She was putting her little spell on me. And if she wanted to kill me, that's okay. That's fine. But as a woman, I feel like, honestly, I feel like I don't know how this would be received by a male viewer, because there are so many little nuances of what it's like to deal with men as a woman that rang so fucking true to me. Little things that I don't really see kind of represented in film that much, because maybe they're not like huge things or people don't think of them, but just her earnestness in wanting to find a man to love fully, doesn't really matter who it is, and doing that not really to service him, but to kind of like about her identity being tied to this thing, but not necessarily in such a simplistic way. Like, I feel like often with that kind of idea, it'll be like, oh, well, she's not a confident woman, or she's not an independent woman, or she's a doormat, or she's repressed.
That's, tropes of women. Not tropes, but like archetypes of
women. Totally. Yeah. And that's not the case here. It's so much more complex and subtle than that. And I feel like it speaks to something true that often women aren't really willing to own up to, because it's a shameful, embarrassing thing. But we are kind of socialized to center our identities in our capacity to love and our capacity to care for other people, particularly men. And then in kind of living out that ideal and that kind of expectation in this way, she's kind of doing everything she's supposed to do. She's coming up against the reality of men. Like, there's a scene where she's talking to her boyfriend, and we get both what they're both thinking, and she's like, you know, so in love, and she feels like she's falling more in love with him all the time, and she loves all the little things about him and whatever. And he's thinking about how you can't truly love a woman as a man, because you lose your masculinity if you do that. And there's just something so painfully vulnerable and true about it, even though it's got this veneer of, like, you know, it's beautiful and it's glossy and
heavily stylized.
Yes, very much so. But then at the same time, it goes to these places that I really haven't seen reflected before and that I really identified with. And I can't express enough how much I loved this movie.
Is this a new top 10 movie for you?
Like if I could go back to 2016 and pick?
No. Like your top 10 movies of all time.
Oh, you know what? I can't do that because I love every fucking thing. That's the thing. Like someone, I was talking to a man, obviously, recently, who's not a film critic. So fuck you. Men love to tell me how to do what I do. and he was saying how like, oh no, but it doesn't make sense to give 5 stars to lots of movies because the spread should be like, there's a lot in the middle. Why?
Who cares? It's your spread.
Yeah, exactly. That's not, I don't subscribe to that metric. I'm sorry, but I view the world a different way. I view film and art a different way. And I'm not comparing films to other films.
You're talking about how it made you feel in that moment, right?
Well, not only that, I'm looking at the craft. I'm looking at what it takes to make a film, but I'm not saying like, oh, okay, there needs to be like a small percentage of the best and a small percentage of the worst, you know, and lots in the middle.
That attitude, I think, it just leads you to being like, oh, okay, well, like The Godfather must be a 5-star movie, so I got to compare everything to that. Because everyone says it's good.
That's not what I'm doing. I'm not comparing films to each other at all. I'm comparing them to my perceived reality of the potential for filmmaking and the potential for art. And so if something resonates with me as like, this is a fantastic, perfect film, it doesn't matter like if I think 80% of the movies that I've seen are fantastic, perfect films.
It just means you're having a fucking good time.
I'm just doing it a different fucking way. Yeah. And like my way is valid too. So fuck that guy who's not listening to this probably. and I just really love The Love Witch. If you haven't seen it yet, you should watch it. And honestly, it's so fucking hot. Like, holy shit. I wasn't prepared for that. That's a whole separate issue. But I really didn't. I didn't know. I didn't know what to expect.
I saw The Love Witch when it first came out and like I really enjoyed it, but I feel like I was only kind of enjoying it on an aesthetic level because I love those old movies. Yeah. You know, I love an old movie.
It's so striking.
Kind of wasn't really digging into it the way it deserves to be dug into. I really want to see it again. Where did you watch it?
Oh, it was somewhere.
Tubi.
Yes, it's on Tubi.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Fucking shout outs Tubi. That's our favorite. Tubi. We need to get a Tubi sponsorship with all their cash that they're rolling in. Because you get some shit on there that it's like, this is honestly, Tubi is my personality. Like there's some stuff that it's like, no one made this movie. Like, how the fuck did it end up here? This doesn't even count as a film. And then there's other stuff that's like...
It's The Love Witch.
Yeah. And all of those things are valid.
Well, I wanted to talk about a movie that I gave 5 stars to this week.
I love a 5-star.
It wasn't on Tubi, but it was on Mubi. It was released by Mubi.
Oh.
So this is a short from Chile. That came out late last year, I believe. It's called The Bones. So The Bones kind of, it positions itself. It starts with like, you feel like you're watching something that's been restored because it'll instantly say, this movie was originally made in 1901, but was restored by blah, blah. That's what you're watching now. So it is actually completely new. It is directed by Cristobal Leon and Joaquin Cosina, I believe. I might have fucked up the pronunciation there. I'm sorry. But anyway, so this movie purports to be the world's first stop-motion animation. But then immediately things get a bit weird. I had to do some reading about Chilean history to actually get this. So it shows a seance, a young girl performing a seance, and she summons 2 men from Chilean history, one of whom was part of the Pinochet dictatorship and was not born in 1901. So immediately things get very strange. And I believe this movie came out because Chile just had a referendum on changing its constitution, which I think did not go through. But anyway, it has this long history of feudalism and the oppression of native people and stuff like that. And I think it kind of reckons with that because it's a little way into this short that you realize that the stop motion objects used to make this movie are actually parts of human bodies, legs, arms.
Oh, my God.
Stuff like that. And it's just, it's extremely haunting. It's extremely strange. And I just feel like I learned something from it, not only about the real world, but also about the way you can tell a story. It's really incredible. I think everyone should see it.
Wow. Have they made other films?
Yes, they have. They're big into stop motion. There was one they made a while ago, Wolf House.
Okay.
That got a lot of...
A short as well?
I think it was a short feature, like 70 minutes or something.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, but it looks fun.
Cool.
So they're ones to watch, in my opinion. Yeah.
Love that. Hey, we watched something that sucked as well.
Yeah.
So for balance, let's talk about Beast.
Oh, my God. I hated this movie.
Yeah, there's not much to say, honestly. You know what's, like, disappointing about it?
Yeah.
You hear about, okay, there's a movie where Idris Elba is having a fucking punch on with a lion.
Mm-hmm.
100%, I'm there. Sounds great. How can they go wrong? How can they? The bar is low. I'm not expecting much.
Yeah. When we went into this movie, we were like, this is going to be fun. It's going to be so stupid.
Yeah. It's going to be like a fun, dumb, like.
Fast and Furious.
All it needed to be.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that. Like, it didn't even. And he does fight a lion, like hand-to-hand combat. And it's still not good. Like, that's so what's stupid. Even that scene is not even fun.
Yeah.
Like, how could you fuck up so badly? Idris Elba, I'm sorry. Like, he's great. Didn't need him here. Didn't need anyone. Nothing. Nobody was doing anything interesting for me. I'm sure there's some kind of direction that probably went into that because they all sucked.
Yeah, they did. Oh, my God. Some of the dialogue in this movie was really. Was
like.
You and I laughed out loud at some of these lines.
Oh, so embarrassing. Like, yeah, we get what's going to happen. You have to repair your fucking relationship through fighting the lion. And then what's the poacher subplot? Like, what are you trying to say?
That's what I was about to mention.
It's so like, stupid.
The poachers are the bad guys, obviously. Like, that's pretty obvious. But then
they're not even the bad. Sometimes they're the victims. And then, like, the eco people who, like, this guy that we form a relationship with throughout the movie was supposed to, but who gives a fuck about him?
Yeah, he's a dickhead.
He's, like, now we learn that he's not a good guy either. And, like, but then it doesn't do anything with that information. It's just kind of like, oh, by the way, this.
And then Idris Elba punches the fucking lion.
Like, it's pretty funny that the lion has a whole motive.
But is the movie pro-lion or anti-lion? That's what I don't get.
I don't understand what it's pro and what it's anti, like, at all, ever. And even the decisions that they make are stupid. Like, it's not fun to look at. Like, nothing about it was good. So, anyway.
Yeah, like, maybe you could watch this on streaming if you're, like, a bit drunk or a bit high and, like.
True. If you're high, it's good, probably. Yeah. Because you'd be like, why the fuck are they doing this? Like, why is anyone doing anything? But still, it's just kind of tedious.
It was really tedious.
It's literally just like, okay, someone gets eaten by the lion. And then someone goes away to look for the lion. And you're like, well, don't do that. And then they come back. And then, yeah, it's always like, oh, hang on. I'm just going to check something out. And then the lion attacks them. And you're like, no fucking way. It's just so dumb. But anyway, that's that. We've got a fucking theme today.
Oh, I wanted to mention one more movie that I watched recently. I'll make it quick because I know we got a theme to get to. But I was really taken by this movie. So this is a movie from 1970 by a director called Per Portabella. And how do you say vampire in Spanish?
Vampiro, I guess.
Oh, okay. Well, that is not the title of this movie.
Wait, what's it called?
It seems to have two titles. When I watched it, it was called just Vampire, so vampire without the E. But sometimes it's referred to as, this word is so strange looking. Quaresuc.
What the fuck is that?
It's apparently a Catalan word for a worm's tail.
What? Like the tail of a worm?
Yeah.
A worm is just a tail.
That right?
What?
But anyway, this movie is absolutely bizarre. So the worm's tail refers to like the tail end of a piece of film stock, unexposed film stock. Oh. This movie, Jesus Franco was making an adaptation of Dracula that had Christopher Lee in it. Per Portabella was on set just doing like BTS footage, but then he took that BTS footage and he edited it into another version of Dracula.
What the fuck?
And it's so bizarre. What? It's like, am I watching a making of documentary or am I watching Bowfinger. Dracula? There's this one bit that I fucking loved where you're seeing like behind the scenes of the movie, you're seeing the cameras, you're seeing all that stuff, but then it just cuts to one of the characters waking up and it's like he woke up from a nightmare of being in a movie. And then the scene where Dracula is staked through the heart just kind of becomes the rap party. And it's
this
like,
is nuts.
It's so nuts. It has no audio, no synchronized audio. It's just like weird sound effects the whole way through.
I want to see this.
It's really cool.
This sounds great. This sounds like a good thing to put on during a Halloween party.
Yeah, just in the background.
Yeah.
It seemed to me it was kind of just like, you know what fucking Dracula story is? I don't need to do shit. I can just put this shit out here. You know it's Dracula.
Oh, I love that. They could have done that with Beast.
I wish they had. This movie's only 66 minutes long.
That sounds amazing. Okay, but so it's called two names or what's the deal?
It's called either, you might find it under Vampyr or you might find it under Quadricook Vampyr.
Okay, okay.
I don't speak Catalan. Oh,
I love that. I really love that you brought that to us today because that's welcome. Fucking hectic. Cool.
Cool. Well, let's do the theme then, hey?
Yeah, let's dance to the fucking music.
What do you think is the best Shakira song?
I like that song "Moscas en la Casa" about how, like, the feeling of having flies in your house.
Oh, I think you
now I always think about it because my cat likes when there are flies in my house. Wait, what do you think?
I thought you were going to say "She-Wolf."
Oh fuck! Oh, I forgot about that. That's a terrible song.
Is it? I love that song.
Oh, okay, maybe it's all right. Yeah, She-Wolf. What's the deal? Firstly, the theme is werewolves.
Yeah.
Secondly, it kind of bothers me how the women have to be called she-wolves.
Loba.
Like, that's kind of, I hate it.
Yeah, it's not like it's he-wolf and she-wolf.
Yeah, like, why can't we be werewolves too?
Well, some of the movies we watch for this theme, there definitely are lady werewolves.
White lady werewolves. Plenty of those. I think werewolves is a hectic theme and it's weird that it's taken us this long to get to it.
Yeah, it's so obvious.
They are actually, if someone asked me a few months ago, how do you feel about werewolves? I would be like, I don't really feel any kind of way about them. And now I'm like, you know what? I love werewolf movies. I love them. And the weird thing is in uni, because this may come as a shock to you guys, but I am a gender studies major. And and I did a class called Animal Human Cultures and we did this whole like thing about werewolves and how they relate to feminism. And even back then, I didn't feel the same love for werewolves that I do now, just kind of revisiting this canon.
The interesting thing about the werewolf canon to me is the first movie I watched for this theme was The Wolfman from 1941.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was reading about that, it was interesting to note that, so this is a universal horror movie. I was familiar with The Wolfman because he does appear in a lot of the later Frankenstein movies, like Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. But this one, unlike Dracula and Frankenstein, the other iconic Universal monsters, the Wolfman or the werewolf doesn't really have kind of a literary background. All the tropes about werewolves kind of come from movies and TV.
I feel like they come from also from like
folklore.
Folklore, yeah. And when I was doing some research into this theme to be like, what's the deal with the fucking werewolf? Like, how the fuck did we invent this thing? Or like, you know, I mean, maybe they're real. But it seems like so many different cultures around the world have like a version of the werewolf, which is weird. Or in some countries where they don't have wolves, like in India, they have were-tigers apparently.
Oh.
So like they adapt it. But also it sounds like way, way back at the time of like, you know, witch trials and stuff in Europe, there were werewolf trials too. People were like actually charged with being werewolves and executed for the crime of being a werewolf. So like people have been werewolves for a long fucking time. And then we just started making movies about it. But how fucking hectic is that?
When did it, was it always like full moon, silver bullets,
yeah, when Wolf did all Spain? That stuff come in?
Like,
I feel like a lot of that stuff, because they are mentioned in the Malleus Maleficarum, which obviously I read as a teenager. they talk about witches turning into wolves and whatever. Right. I mean, I guess it's more that thing of like you have to be wary of people, particularly women, who can like take the shape of something else. And a wolf is like scary and dangerous and around and was actually like a threat to people already just in its regular form.
Yeah, I was reading there quite a few instances of villages actually being terrorized by a wolf.
God, it's so much like Beast. That would have been much better as a fucking
going
werewolf
into
movie.
Beast, I literally thought it was going to be like a werelion movie.
That would have been cool. That would have been interesting. But yeah, I feel like a lot of that stuff, I don't know, I have no idea where the tropes come from, but some of it surely would have come from like back then, because those you know, there were always manuals about, like, here's what you do if this happens, if there's a fucking werewolf next door.
And that's what the people do in these movies that we watched.
Yes, they consult the clergy. Like, you have to, like, get this advice from and you can see in these movies, like, particularly in The Wolfman, that it kind of crosses the lines of different kinds of religions and approaches to spirituality, whatever. Like, we can all come together and realize that there are werewolves.
Any time in a horror movie where you see the clergy being involved or religion being involved, I think that's a clear sign that whatever you're seeing has some real potential to have some really transgressive themes.
Totally.
Especially like those early movies like The Wolfman. It's obviously like a really tragic thing to be a wolf. But at the same time, the monster is the protagonist. And with a lot of these movies, the monster is the protagonist. It's a really interesting flip on the horror formula.
That's what's so fucking interesting about them, I think, is that they're always kind of tragic figures.
Yeah.
And they're the villain and they're the victim at the same time.
Mm.
And you're not sure watching them, like, what am I afraid of? Am I afraid that a werewolf is going to attack me? Or am I afraid of becoming a werewolf? Because they're both threats in this world.
Yeah.
And it's scary. It's also kind of interesting because, like, in The Wolfman, there are all these different conflicting folkloric and religious forces. And it feels like it's talking to this idea of, like, old wisdom bumping up against new kind of customs or ways of seeing the world.
Yeah, and the, like, scientific approach of Talbot's father as well, which kind of is his undoing because he doesn't believe him.
Yeah. I liked the line in this that I think the, like, priest or whatever says, where he says he's fighting with the fortune teller. I love that there's, like, such a fortune-telling element of this whole film. But anyway, he says fighting against superstition is as hard as fighting against Satan himself. And even that line, like, he says it as a priest. So he's not speaking about his own religion. But as a viewer, it feels subversive. It feels like there's, like, he's kind of betraying himself in some way in that moment.
That's interesting. Yeah, I do think these Universal horror movies, they're pretty fucking old, but they do have a lot of potential to be, like, a little bit sly like that.
It felt modern in so many ways. Firstly, I said out loud while I was watching this movie while I was home alone, this movie is so fucking great to look at. Like, it's beautiful. The set design is crazy.
And some really psychedelic, like, panic sequences.
Yes. It's just, like, a stunning movie. And another thing that's great about it is it's a fucking people hanging out in a parlor talking to each other movie, which is my favorite subgenre because I've mentioned it before.
So do we need to do a people hanging out in a parlor and talking about it movie theme?
Yeah, and a letterboxed list because if anyone can point me in the direction of one that already exists, there definitely is one. That would be great because I love when people hang out in a parlor in these old fucking movies and they're all kind of facing different directions and they're, like, you know, swilling brandy or whatever, and they're discussing, like, some tragedy.
I can think of so many.
It's great. Huh? I wish I had a fucking parlor.
Yeah, I could see you in a drawing room.
Thank you.
But because you're a lady, you would have to be, like, sitting on the couch sewing, doing cross stitch.
Yeah, maybe. Or I'd be having a panic attack.
Yeah, you'd be comatose on the chaise.
Like, the men would be whispering so I don't hear.
Yeah, but they're just over there.
Yeah. I also loved the line in this movie, everyone knows about werewolves. And I felt like that's a funny line. It felt kind of prescient because, like, now I feel like everyone knows about werewolves because of this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, directly because of this movie and all other werewolf movies that have come after it. Because of this movie, like, that, this, even the character design, like, that's the quintessential werewolf. And he's really cute. Like, he's not very scary looking. He's kind of endearing.
You think he's cute as a werewolf?
I think he's cute as a fucking human too, but, you know.
Yeah, no, he's definitely pretty handsome as a human. By the end of watching all the Frankenstein movies, I was like, I definitely have a big crush on Lawrence Chaney Jr. There's something about him.
Yeah, I agree. But I like the werewolf thing, and obviously it taps into that running theme throughout these movies and these stories where, you know, you've got some, like, little hairy wolf legs sticking out of, like, a pantsuit.
Yeah.
That image is so symbolic of this dichotomy that we're looking at of, like, man and beast and civilization versus nature. Like, you can encapsulate it so easily in such a funny but also kind of scary image.
I didn't find any of these movies particularly scary.
Really? Did you? I'm trying to go back in my head over what the fuck I always, as a kid, I watched An American Werewolf in London probably like once every couple of months. And every time I was scared, particularly in the beginning, like obviously it's got like horror comedy elements too.
Yeah.
Not as many as An American Werewolf in Paris. But in the beginning, in the moors, when
yeah, the moors are scary.
The moors and even when they go to that, what's it called? The Sheep's Head or whatever the fucking, the pub. Yeah. Like that whole thing is so atmospheric and scary in a way that it sticks with me, and anytime I'm in a town, like a little town or anywhere that looks like it's the moors, like I think about it. It's just you feel so vulnerable and so much like an outsider, which I guess is what the werewolf is.
There are so many of the movies we watched for this theme have the outsider theme.
Yeah.
American Werewolf in London is a good one. Like he's in a foreign country. And,
yeah.
But also, did you get around to watching Teddy or had you seen Teddy before?
I loved Teddy.
Yeah, me too.
So fucking much. Teddy's a movie from 2020, a French movie. It's currently on Shudder in Australia at least.
Yeah, you should go watch it.
100% don't not watch it.
But yeah, the reason I'm mentioning it is because the main part of Teddy that I found really absorbing was it's set in a provincial French town. There's not a whole lot going on. Everyone knows each other. And the main character, Teddy, is such an outsider.
Yeah.
And then the fact that he turns into a werewolf makes him even more of an outsider. And it kind of ends in just like, what's the word I'm looking for? Incompatible differences between him and the people of the town.
Yeah. What's interesting, I mean, I feel like he already – I feel like him becoming a werewolf, like in so many of these movies, it's really symbolic of the difference that already exists within him that he's kind of struggling to articulate or act on. It's such an incredible performance by him as well. And it's a really funny movie, but it's just like I was so blown away by this movie. It's made by these twins, Ludovic and Zoran Bukhem. I don't know how to say that, but they're like these young twins that like whatever the fuck they make next, I'm going to watch it immediately because they are so talented. But what I found really interesting about this, among many other things, was that there are a lot of werewolf movies set in that like teen coming of age kind of space.
Yeah, it's a lot of like puberty themes.
Yeah, I mean, it lends itself really well to that kind of liminal state of like things in transition, like a lot of coming of age stories. It just really works for that kind of in between period. But he's dating this girl, and then after he becomes a werewolf and his life kind of gets fucked up, she breaks up with him and she tells him it's because she's changed and grown and he hasn't. And that's what's so like, that's such an interesting moment watching this movie because actually he's undergone this huge change.
And she hasn't. She just got her fucking braces off.
She listens to rap now.
She went to a party. Yeah, she listens to rap now.
But it's such an interesting insight into, I feel like, adolescence and masculinity.
Yeah.
And like this movie is so much about like boys' feelings and men's feelings and fathers and sons kind of communicating and not communicating. And we don't really get to see men grapple with feelings.
No.
In film, like at all, really. But it is such a stunning movie that deals with all of these like really heavy issues, like growth and death and whatever. But it's so funny and it's so beautiful to look at, but kind of gross and uncomfortable. Some of the scenes are just like, I was losing my mind. Tension. There's a scene, I'm going to use a word that's kind of disgusting, so I'm sorry. There's a cunnilingus scene that like ratchets up tension in this way that I hadn't really seen before. And that was great. It feels like an equal opportunity kind of film in terms of where the scares are.
Yeah, it's never trying to, like, obviously, you know it's a werewolf movie, you know all the tropes of the werewolf movie, but this movie's never, ever trying to be something you've seen before. It's not trying to appeal to that part of your brain where you're like, oh, I know this. I'm on board with this.
It goes to a place that you just really don't see coming.
But at the same time, it still feels like it's part of the werewolf canon.
Totally. And another part of it that's really common to most werewolf movies, I think, is that people really want to fuck like werewolves. Like, that's what I learned watching.
All these movies are really horny.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, if you become a werewolf, suddenly you're, like, sexually in tune with people in a way that you weren't as a human. And that's what we're all missing, is that, like, animalistic kind of thing. Because as soon as they become werewolves, they have, like, great sex.
Did that happen in American Werewolf in London?
Does he have sex with the nurse and it's good?
Yeah, well, I know, like, where he meets the nurse when he's already been infected and that.
Yeah, I guess we don't see, like.
It was a different time.
Yeah, and that's maybe not a huge part of that movie.
True, true.
But it's also not a coming-of-age story, that one.
That's true,
which is interesting,
yeah,
about it. It's more kind of the grappling with your own, like, inner demons and your own kind of discomfort with where you sit as, like, a person who's been socialized to act a certain way, and then also having this feeling that you maybe have these kind of urges inside you, or this kind of animalistic drive that doesn't fit with society.
Are you talking about Teddy or American Werewolf in London?
American Werewolf in London.
Well, it could apply to both, but yeah, and I also read American Werewolf in London as a tale of survivor's guilt, in a way.
Totally.
Where it's kind of like, I think in a lot of these movies, knowing that you are a werewolf is the same as knowing that you have died.
And that you're dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, you are a threat to the people you care about. And then what are you going to do with that information? Mm. So it's always such a tragic, or pretty much always a really tragic story. Like, you're not really allowed to survive your own story as a werewolf.
Yeah.
And we kind of know that. And there's something really kind of, it's almost like a trauma that hasn't yet occurred, but we're somehow already in the wake of it. Like, there's something really kind of sad about it. But at the same time, it's so funny and it's so, like, lighthearted, and then it looks fantastic. Obviously, Rick Baker did the effects, won an Oscar. Then he and John Landis went on to make Thriller, which we were discussing because I was playing it earlier to, like, get jazzed up. We were discussing earlier that, like, Thriller is like a theatrical short two-reeler, which was pretty hectic. When I was growing up, when I was a kid, everyone in my family was a huge fan of Michael Jackson.
Okay.
Obviously, we are not endorsing Michael Jackson in any way at all, but I'm just telling a story about before, you know, when Thriller came out, nothing, we didn't know this yet.
Yeah.
Especially my auntie Marcella, or we know her as Chiquita, she was a big fan of Michael Jackson. So she had got, like, a VHS of the Thriller movie. And especially as, like, a little kid, it felt like this is a feature length movie.
Right.
And we would always, my sister and I would go over to my grandma's house and be like, can we please watch the movie? Can we please watch the movie? And we'd watch it over and over again, and we'd get so fucking scared. Like, we were terrified. And I had no concept that this is a music video. Like, I really thought, this is a fucking movie. We've been sitting here for an hour watching it. And it would scare the shit out of me.
How long
and
is
I
it?
Loved it. I think it's like 15, 20 minutes, something like that. But anyway, they do obviously the same kind of transformation, but with more of I was a teenage werewolf vibe,
yeah,
for Mikey. But that was a beautiful scene in American Werewolf in London too. Like, that transformation scene, that's what you're fucking paying for the ticket for. That's it. That's where it is.
A lot of these movies are all about the effects and grossing you out a little bit. It's like a kind of body horror.
It is.
So it's not surprising that so many of these movies deal with the same kind of stuff you see in body horror movies, changes, yep, to your body, biological urges,
yep,
things like that.
Yeah. And I feel like often a fear of women. And I really felt that in I think the oldest movie that we watched, because it's probably the oldest movie we can find, Wolfblood, A Tale of the Forest from 1925.
Did you end up watching this?
Yeah.
I didn't watch it in the end.
Okay. That's for the best.
this movie, surprised.
Firstly, not great. Like, really, I know it's from 1925. It's not good.
This is the earliest surviving werewolf movie.
Yeah, because there's a movie from 1913 called The Werewolf, but it's lost. So if anyone knows where it is, If you want to just comment on our Instagram.
They're always finding lost films in, like, Norwegian mental institutions. So it's got to turn up somewhere.
If anyone's currently listening from one of those, just have a look around you. Move some cushions. Anyway, so this movie, God, there's not really anything to recommend in it.
That's sad. I heard it's not really a horror movie. It's more of a romance.
Yeah, it's kind of just, and it's like watching it just felt like, okay, the werewolf in this movie is not what is to be feared. It's the woman, women in general. There is so much about, like, being scared of women. Oh, you better not get sick, because I heard of a man who got sick and a woman quickly married him while he was on his deathbed. Or, you know, I heard of a man who died because his wife poisoned him. Like, it's all just like they're terrified of women. But the interesting thing is that it still has that same central idea of, like, this tension between, like, city and forest, between who we're trying to be, who we've become, but where we actually come from, and reckoning with that, because we deal with this girl they refer to as a city-bred girl who is suddenly thrust into the forest, and that's, like, you know, she's an heiress or whatever, so she goes to, like, live on. It's like her name is on the building. That's, like, where her family's from. So she should have some kind of ties to it. But it's that awkwardness, that tension. And I feel like these werewolf movies lend themselves to awkwardness, because that idea of, like, suddenly you're growing this, like, weird stubbly hair out of your body and it's kind of embarrassing and you need to, like, run away and hide yourself from people. Like, there is something so awkward about that. Mm. That's so visceral that you can then use that to describe these other awkward experiences that we have as people.
Yeah, there's definitely in a lot of these movies a sense of shame in the transformation, and not just the transformation, but the stuff that kind of precedes the transformation. And it's so fascinating the way each movie does that a little bit differently. Like in Teddy, he starts growing hair on his tongue.
That was so gross.
And when he has the long hair growing out of his eyeball.
Teddy was really good at making those, like, really uncomfortable moments. And things you haven't seen before.
Yeah. Another one that did that was When Animals Dream. And this one ties into what you were saying about women before. And that parochial thing that we've already talked about in so many of these is, like, the townspeople don't like the wolf. The townspeople have their pitchforks and their torches. They're coming to get you. But it is a modern setting. This is a Danish movie. I'm so willing to listen if you think that I've completely misinterpreted this movie. I thought it was so smutty.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know. Like, to me, it kind of seemed like all the worst tendencies of contemporary European cinema.
Interesting.
To the point where it became like a smutty, like Emmanuel, like a young girl's sexual awakening in the face of her impending mortality.
Mm.
And, like, obviously I'm not against the expression of women's sexuality, but this movie seemed really tailored to the male gaze to me. And there's something about the fact that the lead actor in this is so young looking, she's so petite, she's nubile.
Right.
And then the first thing she does when she finds out she's probably a werewolf, she's transforming, she goes out and has sex with one of her co-workers, and it's, like, really, like, lingeringly shot.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't hate this movie, but it's just something about it didn't sit
right
with me.
That's so interesting, because I agree with what you're saying, but it just didn't hit me in that way.
Right.
I just felt like, I guess because, I don't know, I guess I expected, and I'm sure you did too though, but I expected that, like, a lot of these movies would be about that kind of woman entering into adulthood, kind of finding herself in her own sexuality
but
thing.
But compare this to something like Ginger Snaps. It's like...
Yeah, but I didn't find a big difference. I mean, I found a difference in quality and in story, but I felt like, you know, obviously the transformation in When Animals Dream, it starts on her breast. Like, she starts to kind of grow hair on this, like, cut on her breast. It's like so – it is very sexual, like, this transformation for her. But for whatever reason, that didn't, like, hit me in a smutty way. Now that you're talking about it, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's interesting. Maybe I don't know why I watched it with different eyes. Maybe I'm just a huge slut.
Well, maybe. It honestly was almost like an exploitation movie to me, but I don't think it was self-aware about it.
But it was shot in this, like, art house kind of way.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's like it really didn't do what it thought it was going to do, and I found the themes really muddled. Obviously, the thing about women's burgeoning sexuality, people's fear of women's burgeoning sexuality is a thing in there. Like, it's talked about. So in this movie, the werewolf thing, the lycanthropy, is hereditary. So the main character's mother, is her name Marie?
That sounds right. I never remember names.
Yeah, me either. She's basically comatose, and we find out that's because she is actually a werewolf and she's been given these injections to make her comatose. Mm. So it's been passed down to Marie. It's starting to come out in her. But anyway, and
but everyone's really scared. She doesn't know about it.
Yeah, until it starts to happen to her. But there's this bit where they talk about the way her mother was before that and how men were, like, drawn to her but also scared of her. And, so obviously the theme is about people being afraid of women expressing their sexuality. But also there's some stuff in there about, like, generational abuse and maybe the treatment of the differently bodied, the differently abled. Yeah. It's all a bit muddled to me.
I found that bit really compelling, and also this idea of, like, women as carers and, like, the responsibility of caring. Because I found her dynamic with her mum to be, like, the most interesting part of the movie.
Okay.
And it was something that I hadn't seen that much of. And the way she's kind of, like, made into almost like a little wife with the mum being basically absent.
There was definitely something about her and her father's dynamic that was a bit.
I guess I didn't receive that as, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, what's the word? What's that word people say?
Incest?
No, like when it's for no reason.
Oh, gratuitous.
Thanks.
I don't know why I said incest.
It's kind of similar. I didn't find it gratuitous because I felt like that is the dynamic that I am very familiar with, not from my own life, but from girls I know and girls I grew up with. Like, you see that happen a lot. That is something that really does happen. And so I think I was kind of just, like, happy to see it reflected on film. But I take your point. Like, I think that's true now that I think about it. It wasn't my favorite of these. And you mentioned Ginger Snaps and that movie.
Is that your favorite of these?
Can I just quickly say I've got a little announcement to make.
Oh, my God.
If you're a woman and you loved the movie Ginger Snaps as a kid, you're attracted to girls now. I don't make the rules. That's just how it is.
This is definitely a queer movie. No doubt about it.
Like, this movie to me was really important at a very important time.
I almost think – so this movie – if you're going to give, like, a really high level explanation of what Ginger Snaps is, it's basically girl gets her period and because of her period, she becomes a vampire.
It's a werewolf.
Totally. You know what else is Carrie, but with a werewolf? Teddy.
Yes, it
totally
is.
Totally.
Yeah.
But anyway, where was I with this movie? Okay. So there's these two sisters, Carrie and Bridget. And they,
again, they're total outsiders.
I just called her Carrie. Her name is Ginger. Oh. Ginger and Bridget.
Oh, we're both having slow brain days.
And in the first act of this movie, both of them have not menstruated yet, and they kind of view it as something they don't want to do. They don't want to be like the other girls, especially Bridget. And I think, do you think you can read Bridget as maybe a trans character?
I've never thought about it that way.
That denial of, like, the biological inevitability?
I think that's super interesting. But at the same time, I also feel like that is the experience of growing up as a girl.
Okay.
Like, you are kind of warned about, like, all of these horrible things are going to happen to you. And also you see over and over again how women are treated and, like, what there is waiting for you. And as a kid, I was like, please, please, please don't let this happen to me. Like, you don't want – I mean, obviously some people do, but – I don't think it's that uncommon to not want to grow up into the model that you have available to you, which is so restrictive, which is so full of, like, shame and disgust and guilt. And, like, it just feels like there is nowhere for you to go as you grow. Like, it didn't feel aspirational for me. So when I watched it as a kid, I really identified with Bridget because that was how I felt.
And what you're saying now just really, really resonates with the arc of Ginger in this movie where the thing happens to her. She gets bitten by the werewolf. She starts to change. And Bridget does take all this effort to find a cure for her, but you kind of know it's not going to – she's on a track. She's done.
Totally.
And it's really devastating.
Receiving her differently.
Yeah.
And she starts kind of interacting with men differently. And – she starts to kind of use what she has at her disposal, which is the same thing that is kind of victimizing her. That's like her only form of currency or power. And it's all kind of mixed up and you're never really sure, like, is this empowering for her or is she should she is this like a denial of self, or is she coming into her own? Like, you're not really sure. And that, I feel like, is the experience of growing up as a woman. Like, you just don't know what is okay and what you're doing for yourself and what you're being pressured to do. And also unrelated, but Catherine Isabel, we have Catherine Isabel because of this movie, and she's fucking fantastic.
She's so good.
I love her so much. Obviously, the Susker sisters, as like students of horror, as any good filmmakers are, saw that and put her in American Mary. And honestly, I just think she's fantastic, and I'm really grateful that we have her. Also, Karen Walton's screenplay is like incredible. It's so fresh. It's like there's something electric about it. It's,
yeah, totally. Subversive. The dialogue feels,
yes,
real.
Feels real even now. Like, it feels, yeah, like fuck Euphoria. Like, this is like edgy, subversive, but like gentle, in a gentle way, not in your fucking face, like hypersexualized.
Yeah.
But it makes these teenage girls feel like people.
Yeah.
Like the way teenage girls really act and how they really talk.
When I was watching this, I was like, if this came out now with an A24 budget, released by, yeah, A24, people would fucking love it.
Yes. Yes. And it is like a cult classic, but it doesn't get the respect that it deserves because it's honestly like, it's crazy. Even the fact that it's Canadian, like, it's kind of an outsider even in that way.
That's so rude.
John Fawcett is the director, and he made Orphan Black, which I've never seen, but I know people know like that. It. So whatever, that's something. The line, I can't remember which sister says it. One of them says, God, I hate our gene pool. It's like such a
that's Ginger.
Perfect encapsulation of that teenage feeling of being like disaffected.
How cute is the mum character in this, yes, movie though, with, yes, her little hats and, yes, stuff? Yeah.
When Ginger becomes a werewolf and then she suddenly has these like grey streaks and she's like a hot bitch. As a kid, I was like, there's girls. Nothing hotter than that, like having grey streaks. Maybe. And when I rewatched it, it like awakened something deep within me, and I was like, oh, I forgot that having two grey streaks is the hottest you can be. And now I think maybe I should do that.
Yeah, I think you should.
Listeners, let me know. Comment on our Instagram. Tell me if I should get the grey streaks, because I'll do it. If you guys think I should do it, I'll do it.
I think you should do it. Just change it up a bit.
God, I love this movie. It's like, it's coming of age, but it's like this like sapphic kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it, because it hits me on this level. I think I watched it at the right fucking time,
mm-hmm,
and it meant a lot to me in like a really formative time of my life. But also when I look at it objectively, I just think it's a fantastic film. And I'm going to say, I reckon it's the best fucking werewolf movie, because I think it's fantastic.
Ooh. What would I nominate as the best werewolf movie? You know what? It's between that and American Werewolf in London for me.
Yeah, yeah. I think I just don't identify as strongly with those characters. Yeah. And, yeah, the special effects in American Werewolf in London are, like, groundbreaking. But to me, that's not as important as,
Ginger,
like,
Snaps has more point of view.
And, yeah, I think the dialogue's better. I think it's more tonally cohesive.
Mm.
Because sometimes it's jarring when you get that guy with his fucking, he's like rotting away, and we get one of him, his like apparitions.
Oh, yeah.
Every now and then it's like, wait, I forgot we're doing this now. Like, I was looking at seriously a minute ago.
Yeah, that's true.
But I also feel like, yeah, maybe when we think about werewolf movies, we think about like the transformation, we think about the special effects, we think about like these big, more big budget kind of films.
Yeah.
And Ginger Snaps is not that.
No.
And the werewolf at the end, you know, we're looking at a little puppet thing, whatever. Yeah. Like, it's obvious. But also, An American Werewolf in London is probably like the best example that we have of like special effects, werewolf special effects done right. And now it still doesn't look like, okay, no sacrilege, but like, you know what I mean? It's 2022. No. You look at it, totally. Yeah, it's fake.
You got to look at it in context. I think it came out the same year as The Howling.
Yeah, and fucking Wolfen. Like, it was such a big year for werewolf movies.
It really was. Did you end up watching Wolfen? I didn't.
No.
Oh, okay.
I didn't.
Did you watch The Howling?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, you've seen The Howling before?
Such a hectic movie.
It's so, this one really fucks with the werewolf lore.
Yes.
It's like,
yes.
The silver bullet's
so
a thing,
weird. It's such a weird movie.
But the full moon's not a thing, and they can transform whenever the fuck, yep, they want.
Yeah.
And there's a whole coven of werewolves living out there.
Yeah, living like little like hippie, like a little commune life.
It's kind of like Twilight. In Twilight, the vampires are like, we don't want to eat humans. We're just going to eat fucking What do they eat? Deer or some shit?
I don't know about that.
Oh.
Oh, is that what they do? Do they have like a... Because in vegetarian. This movie, there's like a hectic folk band that looks like so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Does that happen in Twilight? Because then I'd watch it.
No, it's Bon Iver instead of a hectic folk band.
Bon Iver.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, I thought the party...
The party scene on the beach is so good.
Yes.
Until Joe the Dante old guy tries to throw himself in the fire.
Also, Dee Wallace is in this movie.
Yeah, she's so pretty.
And she's horror royalty. And I like how the character goes by her maiden name. She's a feminist
Karen
queen.
Karen White, yeah.
Watching that, I was like, wait, what the fuck? This is 1981. Like, what a bad bitch.
Because she was a celeb.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, I'm not fucking losing my name. What the hell?
And her boyfriend was a dickhead anyway.
Also, I love how this film opens. Like, maybe it's not the most sophisticated film. Maybe it's a bit funny and weird. But... it doesn't waste any time. This film opens by telling you exactly what the fuck it's about. They're talking about the noble savage. They're talking about animal magnetism. They're talking about the tension between being an animal and being civilized. Like, they put it all out there on the table, so they're like, okay, now let's have some fucking fun.
But at the same time, like, the Wolfman does that too. There's a lot of werewolf movies that do that. Like, oh, it's the animal urges inside all of us. Yeah. And I just think that's like a little bit of a cop-out to be like, that's the theme. Like,
why?
What else? Like, and what?
That's pretty, but that's a pretty big theme.
Yeah, but I think you've got to do something more with it to actually make it relatable to what human beings actually go through.
I think what's interesting about The Howling is that it's set in this gritty kind of Taxi Driver-esque cityscape.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, it almost feels like it's a crime thriller.
Totally.
So I feel like how it's doing that is it's bringing that tension and that kind of age-old, like, existential thing that we're grappling with into the city, into, like, this metropolitan setting, and it makes it kind of current. It makes it feel, like, relatable in that way.
That's a really good point. It's kind of saying you live in a really fucking unkind world, so do what you can to survive.
And you live in this world that's kind of fake, and it's interesting how it's juxtaposed to the way that the – what are they called? What's that – little coven thing called the something.
Oh, do they have a name?
They have a name. I can't remember what the fuck it is. But anyway, it's juxtaposed to the way that they live, which is like hippie. Yeah, like it looks like less civilized or not less civilized, but kind of it's almost like regressive in this way.
Mm.
And then there are little details too. Like there's a scene where there's a news anchor who's kind of practicing in the mirror, and then when someone comes in to speak to him, he speaks in a completely different voice. Like he's almost like in drag as this like civilized person. And I feel like that brings it back to that theme of like we're all kind of in drag as like civilized humans.
Yeah, the werewolves really, are in drag.
The werewolves are like, that's the true embodiment of ourselves, and we're just pretending like we're buttoned up and we're trying to do this broadcast and we're trying whatever. But like it's kind of it's telling us like I know that you're fucking faking it, like, because you know how I know, because I'm fake. Like we're all doing it.
And then interpreting the movie that way adds so much gravitas to the end where Karen's like, I've been fucking bitten, I can use my platform to tell people what the fuck is going on. And she transforms into a werewolf live on air.
Yes.
And like it kind of collides those two worlds together.
You're taking off the fucking, it's fucking future, mask off.
Jigs.
It's like that's such a powerful scene too, because it's like the spectacle. Like imagine like just how exciting that scene is, because you think like imagine watching a live broadcast and that's happening. You know, everyone watches those like YouTube videos of like that guy who shot himself on TV or whatever. Like people we gravitate towards that kind of thing of like this shouldn't be happening, but it accidentally got out quickly before anyone could stop it, and we got to see this real human horrible horrific moment when we're supposed to be seeing something that's so polished. And like watching that scene of her transforming live on air, it's just, it gets to that part, like that tingly feeling in your spine of like, fuck, this is so transgressive in a way that's like immediate that, I don't know, it just really like, it fucks with you.
Yeah. And then it deflates all that so beautifully with this scene in a bar where people are like, that was fake.
Totally. Like nothing actually, like you can't have it. And she went out thinking, I fucking did something.
Yeah.
I saved the fucking world. But no one gives a fuck. It's like, it's actually so sad.
It's really nihilistic.
It is. I really liked earlier when they're talking about the like, I guess the, like, for lack of a better word, nymphomaniac character of the woman in the fucking.
Oh, Marsha.
Yeah. Somebody refers to her as a very elemental person. It's all that natural energy. And that, to me, again, like, we're always bringing it back to this thing of, like, what is underneath all of this and what does it mean to be an elemental person? What does it mean to have natural energy? Like, if that's natural, then are we unnatural? Like, there is something, I feel like there's this deep distrust of society and civilization and the city more specifically in this movie that I kind of identify with as I live in my little apartment on top of all these other apartments that contain people I've never spoken to in my life.
That's, yeah, I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And also a lot of the other movies we've talked about, even if they don't take place in the big city, there is this distrust of close-knit communities. Yes. We see it in Teddy. We see it in When Animals Dream. I would argue we see it in The Wolfman.
Yes.
And it's just kind of like when humans are together, you get this kind of gross, like, everyone's in everyone's business. Everyone distrusts each other. Let's get the fuck out in the woods and be lone fucking wolves.
Totally. Hey, you know what's cool about The Howling?
What?
Which I only just found out when I was researching for this episode. There are 7 sequels, which means we could do a fucking all-nighter, The Howling all-nighter. We're going to have to line that up for sure. I'm sure they're all great. And there's I think they're making a fucking remake.
Oh, God.
Netflix are at the moment. I'm pretty sure.
With the way movies are going at the moment, I bet Harry Styles is in it. He's in fucking everything.
Have you seen him in anything?
I've seen the trailer for, what's that, Olivia Wilde movie?
Is that where he talks funny?
He's such a bad actor. And there's another one where he's like a gay cop.
Oh, what? Because he wears a dress sometimes.
Yeah, I guess so.
He's allowed. Okay.
Hey, did you end up watching Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory?
Yeah.
Did you love it?
Because you know what? I thought that movie was going to be sexy and I thought it was going to be fun.
It's
neither of those. Fucking sucked.
It's,
you know what's
so
cool? I feel like I'm talking really fast because I'm really excited about werewolves. So I hope this doesn't come off weird.
No, it's fine.
I'll
slow it down in the edit.
Yeah. Give me a nice, sexy, deep kind of baritone.
What, like you're a witness to a crime?
Yeah. I feel like, you know what's interesting about werewolf movies?
What?
You know, there are certain tropes that we see over and over again. And one of them is, you kind of come to, you don't really remember. It's like having an epileptic fit. You don't really remember what you did as a werewolf.
Have you had an epileptic fit?
No. But I've assisted someone who was having one.
Oh, okay, right.
Fucking terrifying. Anyway, so like you kind of come to, it's like a hangover. You don't remember what you've done. And you're kind of like, that's weird that I'm like, where are my clothes? And there's some dirt and blood on me and this person's dead. Like, that's strange. It almost feels to me like it's so ripe as like an allegory for things that we've done regretfully or that we're ashamed of.
Totally.
And I kind of felt like we're going to get more of that in the girls' dormitory. What the fuck is it called? Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory.
Yeah.
Which is an Italian movie from 1963, which already I was like, that's going to be great.
Yeah. And it's dubbed badly into English. What could go wrong?
Oh, it's dubbed so badly. And it's set in this like reform school for girls. So it's like bad girls.
Who are clearly like at least 25 years old, all of them.
Oh, they're so like sexually mature.
Yeah. Nubile.
They're all having like fucking affairs and shit. Like I thought, okay, we're going to get into that, but it's not like that at all. And the thing is the girls are really smart too and they're like kind of calculating.
I liked the girls in this movie. I thought they were really wasted.
They were totally wasted. After I watched it and like nothing happens. Nothing happens at all.
The werewolf part does not even have anything to do with the other plot about the girl sleeping with the old man and getting blackmailed.
You think like this is going to all tie in? No. And obviously there's like some rapey elements that are just like uncomfortable and not really addressed in a good way. But then, so after I watched it, I was like, what the fuck was that? Like, I was so disappointed. And I thought I had done something wrong. Like, maybe I didn't, like, receive it in the correct way.
You are so forgiving of a B movie.
I am. And I'm so unforgiving of, like, an A movie.
yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, you got to meet it on its terms.
That's true.
I looked into it and I read that someone described shooting the film as a chaotic experience with actors all predominantly speaking different languages, French, English, Italian, and German. So no one knew what the fuck was going on
like
set.
Building the Tower of Babel.
It's exactly like that. Yeah. I don't think there's much to say about this movie. If you see it on Tubi and you get tempted because it looks kind of cool and interesting, click away.
It might be fun background if you are not entirely sober.
Maybe. But it's not even that interesting to look at.
There is one guy in it who looks exactly like Peter Lorre, and I was like, how the fuck did they get Peter Lorre? It's not him.
They could have gone more into the menstrual cycle because there's all those girls there and, you know, the moon.
Yeah, they would all be cycling together.
You know what I was reading about recently? I saw some meme and then I started, like, reading into it and, like, apparently there are a lot of men who think that all women get their period when it's the full moon.
Well, yeah, I've definitely met people who think that.
Really? Like they all get it at the same time.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Like, that's literally werewolves.
Yeah. So I guess, like, it's really not a leap to link a werewolf to those kind of changes in a woman's body.
Yeah. The weirdest thing is that there are so many male werewolves.
Yeah. That is really weird.
What are we doing? But just for the record, that's not what happens with women. It is what happens with werewolves, though. And they do always have their period.
Oh.
You look like you're going to say something.
I was, which fucking movie? Oh, it's in Ginger Snaps. You know what? That scene, do you remember Ginger bites her boyfriend, who is from Final Destination, and he starts to urinate blood? Does he get his period because he's a werewolf?
100%.
Wow.
There's always so much blood in this. There's a lot of blood in Teddy as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of blood coming out of him, like out of his mouth and stuff.
When he transforms into the werewolf fully for the first time, he basically like sheds his outer body. Oh, it's strange.
They did such a fucking good job on that movie. I really think more people, when I was watching, I was like, my main takeaway from this episode has to be you need to watch Teddy. More people have to watch this movie. I've never even heard anything about it.
No, me neither. It reminded me a little bit of like if Julia Ducournau, or however the fuck you say her name, was like less confrontational.
And less interested in women.
Yes.
100%. It was very much, it had raw energy. Like the movie totally. Raw.
I would think you could argue that Raw is a werewolf movie in some ways.
Yes.
There are a lot of movies you could say it's actually, a werewolf movie.
In researching this, I found a movie. I didn't watch it because it looked a little bit shit, no offense, but it was directed by a woman and it was about a woman werewolf and she was a vegan who suddenly started craving like meat. And I was like, this is literally Raw. It was made after Raw.
It was made after Raw. Yeah. Right?
I can't remember what it's called. I'm sorry, but
I'm sure we can find it.
It's basically Raw, but it's like less subtle and less good, I think. But I haven't watched it. So again, maybe it's fantastic. I don't know.
Probably not.
You know what I've discovered today, what I've learned through this episode? That I love werewolves. I love them. I'm not even scared of them, honestly, because I find them attractive. And also, I kind of feel sorry for them. And you know they're going to, like, it's kind of like a bee. Like, you can sting someone, but your time's up. Like, they never have long to go.
No, yeah. It's short and always fast. Like, yeah, once it's like zombies. Once you're bitten, it's done.
Yeah.
That's what's scary about the werewolf.
What, that it can, you can become one.
Yeah, totally.
But it's not like vampires where they have communities and dance clubs.
Do vampires have dance clubs?
Yeah, have you ever seen Blade?
No.
Oh, well, you got to watch the Blade trilogy. But
The werewolves in The Howling have a community.
That's true.
But they don't really like each other that much.
But generally werewolves are...
lone wolves.
It's more that you know their days are numbered. Like for whatever reason, it's not necessary because of the lore, but it's necessary because of this like... this archetypal story that we've constructed.
They're incompatible with human existence.
Yeah, they're always like this ticking clock and there's something so sad about them, which makes them less scary because at the same time you're like, fuck, this is it for you. Like next week you're going to be on the ground as a human again, all naked, and everyone's going to be like, what happened to you, man?
When Larry Talbot.
It's sad to see them like that back in their human. There's something about it that's totally. Just so like, it's just, oh, they were just this guy. They were just Stew. And he looks so small and sad now. Fuck, I feel like I'm going to cry.
Don't cry. But I will tell you, when Larry Talbot from The Wolfman comes back to the later Frankenstein movies, pretty much the only thing he ever does in those movies is just be like, I really want to die. Can you help me die?
Yeah.
Like, poor guy.
It's sad. It's a really sad state. If you can avoid it, don't turn into a werewolf. Don't get bitten by one. Yeah. Don't lie on a massage table as a werewolf. Tooth in it. Like, just don't do it. That was Teddy.
He lay on a massage chair that had a werewolf tooth.
No, the table. Remember when he's like, when that woman's like sexually assaulting him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he had the tooth in him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he got bitten.
Yeah. But don't do that. Don't touch them.
Yeah.
Stay away.
Yeah.
I
feel like we.
That was so interesting how there was like, I just really briefly, like female on male, like sexual harassment in that movie, but in like such a delicate way, but at the same time, it was funny. Like, I don't know. They just handled everything like really well.
Beautiful.
That's all I have to say about that.
We're ending these episodes recently with like a Jerry Springer style final thought.
I feel like we've always done that.
Yeah, a little bit.
I love.
What did we learn today?
As a kid,
yeah, I love Jerry Springer too. I would absolutely not be surprised if Jerry Springer once had a guest on who thought they were a werewolf.
Yes, same.
Maybe for like a Halloween special.
That would be a great episode. Mm. Well, anyway, there are so many werewolf movies. Some of them are good. Most of them are not good. But most of the ones we discussed were great.
I don't think there's any werewolf movies in like the horror canon, you know what I mean?
What do you mean?
Like the canon of like the greatest horror movies of all time doesn't really have in that like the right. upper echelons of
right.
that.
Right, yeah. They haven't broken through, but maybe we'll see more.
Mm.
There was that sometimes we see like remakes, like the Wolfman one. That was fucking terrible.
I didn't see it.
So bad. Yeah, we need not a remake, but something different, like this fucking Teddy movie or whatever. Make something different and interesting and put a werewolf in it.
Are you going to watch Ginger Snaps 2 Unleashed?
I am. I found it on the street the other day. I don't know if I've ever seen it. There's a prequel as well.
Is there?
That was shot at the same time as the second one.
Oh.
I can't remember if I've seen it, but it was on the street the other day, so I'm going to watch it and I'll talk about it maybe on the next episode.
Love that. Can't wait.
Okay, there's no two spooks today. Because, you know, there's been a lot going on.
We're all busy.
But we'll do it when we can do it.
Yeah.
And until then, if you want to send us any spooks, like not actually scary things.
You can send us scary things.
Don't send us one of those things where, like, something pops out at you. You, like, have to concentrate and then something pops out.
Yeah. Did you ever get got – you've talked 100%. About them on the pod before. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That shit. You I'm talked very about jumpy.
Miriam's family's swivel chair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just made that girl up. I don't know. She doesn't exist.
Oh.
Anyway, please leave us a review and a rating if you can, because that's actually so helpful. And in the review, you can tell us what's the first thing you would do if you became a werewolf.
Or if you were going to be a werebeast, what animal would you want to be?
Oh.
I would be like a wereflamingo, I reckon.
Why?
I don't know. I just think they're cool.
That's a bit of a way. And I think you'd do it and straight love, like I made a mistake.
Yeah, but I love prawns and they love prawns.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they're yellow.
I've never imagined them eating. Aren't they pink?
Did I say yellow? I meant pink. Fucking hell.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just like the last
episode. You need to focus on being aware human. Yeah, that's what honestly. You need to fucking do.
At least I didn't refer to the Amazon River as the Nile this
that's
time.
That's true. anyway, go to our Instagram or whatever if you want, and we will catch you
on the flippity flop.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.